Hello and welcome to The Love of Cinema, a Picture House podcast. Welcome to our November episode. Every month we pick a highlight of some of the best films coming to your local Picture House cinema. We cannot sadly cover all of the films coming to your local Picture House cinema in a given month because the podcast would be 7 hours long. On today's show, we will be covering Pirates, the directorial debut of Reggie Yates. We'll be covering Chloe Zhao, Oscar-winning Chloe Zhao's foray into the Marvel Cinematic Universe with The Eternals. And we have two titans of world cinema with brand new films coming to your local Picture House. Both of those come out on the 19th of November. We've got Celine Sciamma, who recently released Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Celine has a new film out called Petit Maman, a beautiful film with an even more beautiful runtime, 72 minutes. Wow. And kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum, we've got a film from an incredible Japanese director called Ryusuke Hamaguchi. His film is called Drive My Car, and it is 3 hours long, but it flies by. I adored this film. So we've got a double dose of some world cinema in the show too. Now, I will not be covering these titles alone. In fact, I will not be covering these titles at all, but I will introduce you to Kalichi Ahenyolo and Katie Smith-Wong, who will guide us through these four titles. They've seen them all. They'll give us their reactions as we move through. They're two fantastic film critics. You may have read their words in multiple publications. You may have also heard Katie on the Empire podcast, and I do recommend giving them a follow if you're on social media, because they do tweet their reviews and their film coverage, and I was sort of living vicariously through them during the London Film Festival, because they went to so many films, and it was really great to read their coverage as I was scrolling through my phone. All of their details are in the show notes, and stay to the end of the episode where we talk about their work a little bit more. So I think that's all the housekeeping out of the way. The toilets are at the back in case of emergency. Follow the emergency lighting to your nearest fire escape. And let's get on with the show. First up, we have got Reggie Yates. You may know him from his TV presenting work. Reggie has now written and directed a feature film called Pirates, which is in cinemas on the 26th of November. I'll now pass over to Katie and Kalichi. The first voice you'll hear is Katie.
It's the biggest news Eve ever.
Getting into that party is the only thing that matters.
Boys, we're going on a mission.
Kalichi, Pirates, what did you think?
I thought it was solid. This is Reggie Yates' first directorial film. It's always interesting to see how a director manages their first film, because it can always be a bit of a challenge. And I actually thought it was pretty straightforward, simple, but actually solidly directed by him. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, because he's better known as a DJ. So there's a lot of musical influence in his film. So the film, you know, you got three guys who are about to celebrate Millennium Eve, and it's just like one last hurrah before, you know, things change. However, it had a ring of nostalgia that I really enjoyed, because, you know, who doesn't remember Millennium Eve, their own unique way of seeing in the new millennium?
Yeah, I was spending New Year's Eve with my family listening to Will Smith's Millennium album on full blast, whilst hoping that the world didn't end because of the Millennium bug.
Yeah, I did like the little touches of the Nokia phones. It did bring back a long forgotten time before smartphones and cassette tapes. It did ring back to that age of adulthood without the responsibilities.
It's the nostalgia as well. If you grew up in that era, both of us did, particularly for me, the music is what really stands out. And that for me really encapsulates the whole film. And you have these three great leads in Elliot Adusa, Jordan Peters, and Edda Aluza. The way the film bounces off that energy helps seal the love for the film. That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. They all bring a charm to each of their performances. They're very different, but very relatable characters as well. And I think it's just very easy to just enjoy the ride, so to speak, without sounding corny.
No, it's not corny at all. Because my brother used to have that car. so literally, it brought back so many memories.
Yeah, there are memories of the first car, and it's always a crap car. That, yeah, it did ring a bell as well. But I think the whole thing was just this really charming, really fun kind of nostalgia trip. And as you said, it is a safe directorial debut for Yates.
Yeah.
And I did love the, you know, the shots around London. Always a plus.
And also just, I guess for me as well, I'm always for Black stories and how we depict representation, and to see three Black leads, which in typical British culture, you know, you get them stereotyped or put in a particular box or so forth. These are three guys who are literally just vibing. But I felt at times it was very cartoonish.
Yeah.
In a sort of a kind of in-betweeners kind of way, but lower down.
Yeah, that had a very similar strain of comedy as to the in-betweeners. But that, I think, kind of speaks to that particular audience. And it's a very, it's quite a broad audience as well. I think, I don't know about you, but I think, you know, other, you know, more stronger performances from like the female characters who are just kind of put as just supporting almost stereotypical characters would have been
100%.
It would have become a more rounded story. But at the end of the day, it's just about these three and the friendships that they have with each other.
Yeah. I mean, going back to the female characters, I mean, in this day and age, you just wish they were just a bit more developed, especially as that it was one scene where there's a Jamaican owner of, you know, Caribbean shop, and she has a, you know, attitude. And you just kind of think, you know what? I think we passed the kind of stereotypical jokes, even though they had one funny line, which about, is it plantain or plantain? Which, if you are Black, you know that is a conversation to end all conversations and arguments will start off. I'm surprised there wasn't a jollof joke. Like, which one? I mean, it was in the background, but it was like, it could have been brought out.
I think there's also, we've seen a lot of British Black cinema that has more rounded, more modern female characters as well. So I think, but as a debut, I think it's pretty solid.
So that's Pirates coming to your local picture house at the end of the month. I think it's always good to see something from a debut British screenwriter and director. We recently, if you follow the award cycle, recently the British Independent Film Awards announced their nominations, and Pirates picked up a good number, including a nomination for Reggie Yates for his screenplay for the film. So it's great to hear it already getting some buzz. But that will be at your local pitch house on the 26th of November. And now for something genuinely completely different, we're going back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's the third film from Marvel coming to your cinema this year so far. We've already had Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings and Black Widow, both of which we did cover on previous episodes of The Love of Cinema. Do scroll back through the feed for those. This month, however, this is the one I think I've been most excited about. This is a film called The Eternals. Brand new set of characters. It's not Spider-Man and Iron Man and all of the other mans who appear in these films. This is a brand new set of characters within that cinematic universe that Marvel have created. But the film is directed by Chloe Zhao, a filmmaker I'm a huge fan of. We saw her earlier this year win the Best Director Oscar and the Best Feature Film Oscar. I haven't seen this film yet, but I am fascinated to hear what Katie Ankalichi made of the movie.
5 years ago, Thanos erased half of the population of the universe. But the people of this planet brought everyone back with a snap of a finger. The sudden return of the population provided the necessary energy for the emergence to begin.
I mean, it's a kind of a contrast, because we both saw a press screening the other day, seeing Marvel's Eternals. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I was always, you know, it's a Marvel film, so, you know, the excitement was always there. However, it was a break from convention. You've got Chloe Zhao making her big blockbuster film, and you've got The Eternals. It's not only the next film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but you're also introducing a new group of characters who, you know, they're superpowered beings who arrive on Earth and, you know, essentially protect it for thousands of years, only for it to come to the present day. They're forced to reunite to face a new threat. However, you know, their underlying tension and feelings start to linger and come to the surface when, you know, the threat of mankind is at stake. There is a lot to offer, but it's with this amount of pressure, I think it just caves ever so slightly in terms of the narrative, because you not only have to juggle a whole new group of characters, but you also have to deliver on this huge story that a lot of people are looking forward to. I don't know about you, but I just found that certain parts of it were just underdeveloped.
I agree, and to a certain extent. I think this is the 26th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I felt that it was very different. I think if you come into this film thinking you're going to get Avengers Endgame and all those kind of high points that we had from Phase 3, you're probably going to come out of this feeling a little bit disappointed. And what I think what I appreciated from this film was that it kind of took risks, and the film does take some risks.
Yeah, because you've got, you know, you've got the first gay kiss, you've got the first love scene, you've got the first deaf character, and you've got the first female lead character who is a person of color, who is Gemma Chan's character, Cersei. So it does break a lot of ground. It just needs to have other things that need to back it up. And unfortunately, because all those aspects will draw the attention to the audiences, the story just doesn't add up in certain ways, which kind of leaves certain characters sidelined.
I think because you're dealing with, what, 10 Eternals? So there's a lot of, like, you're introducing them one after the other, and then they kind of rebuild, like, they're coming back, they're like, you get introduced, they break apart, and then it's the whole film spends its time coming back together.
Yeah. How many films did, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe have before the Avengers actually became the Avengers? It was just like, you can't squeeze that much character development into 157 minutes. You need a lot longer.
I agree. I mean, it could have been, I'd be curious to know, do you think it should have been like a Disney Plus series or two films? Because that seems to be like a conversation that I think might dominate.
I didn't think two films would work, because then it would, because where would you cut it?
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop it from being amazing looking.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
One thing that was very pleasing to the eye was you saw Chloe Zhao bring in her, that kind of indie spirit into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And you can sort of look at that screen and say, yeah, that's Chloe Zhao. That's Chloe Zhao. That's Chloe Zhao. And the fact that it was very intimate, like, he was heavily invested in his characters. And for reason's sake, yeah, you kind of need that information. You kind of need that dialogue.
I have to say, I do appreciate Gemma Chan in a lead role.
Absolutely.
Huge lead role. Well, well, you know me, we're all up for representation in cinema. So, it's great that she's this compassionate, caring character, but she steps up to be a leader, despite, you know, Richard Madden's character, Icarus, or even Angelina Jolie's character, Athena, who is two of the strongest characters, but they don't step up as a leader, so to speak. I think that's the best way to put it. I don't know about you.
I think it's a bit deliberate. I think in some ways, Marvel is kind of course-correcting things that should have done in the first three phases, and now we're getting Gemma Chan doing absolute brilliance with her work as Cersei. And I think it's a risk and it's experimental. And I think you have to look at it almost like this is almost like a phase one, but in phase four, like it's just a starting point. And I think it's going to be interesting to see where phase four takes us. We know it's the multiverse, we know what's coming, but we don't know the groundwork of what. So you have to almost think of this as almost like a brand new start of that journey.
Yeah, totally. People forget that the Infinity Saga, you just phases 1 to 3, that's all kind of, that's practically, may I say, done. We need to actually, you know, with Shang-Chi and Black Widow, we're seeing new characters being introduced, not to mention the Disney Plus series. MCU fans need to realize that there'll be different directions, different characters, different approaches on how to tell their stories.
Exactly.
So, you know, Eternals may not be for everyone. I have to admit, you know, there are certain parts that just may not sit well with fans or new fans, but, you know, it brings something new and that should be appreciated.
Yeah. And someone who loves the mythology and the lore and something that's brand new, I attracted to that. That was something that was very, very brand new to me.
All right. Okay. Sign me up. I am going to be buying my ticket when this film opens at Picturehouse Cinemas on the 5th of November. I gather this is one where you do want to stay to the very end of the credits, because there's a couple of post-credit stings which give you a clue as to where the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going in the future. Sticking with Eternals, however, we were lucky enough to get some time with Chloe Zhao when she was in London for the recent premiere of the movie just a couple of weeks ago, and we sent Katie along to talk to her.
Chloe, it is really great to have you on the show. First of all, The Eternals, it is, in comparison to your other films, bigger, so much bigger in terms of scale and budget. What was it about the story that made you sign up as a director?
I love how grand and epic this story is. And I love how we explore all these existential questions about humanity through the intimacy, the messiness of one dysfunctional family of immortal aliens.
Now, I watched the film on Monday. I thought the imagery was really beautiful, and how the relationships between the characters was really well defined. Because and not only is it bigger in terms of scale and budget, but, you know, in comparison to stories like The Songs That My Brothers Taught Me and Nomadland, they're very real characters, whereas here you've got a quite renowned star-studded cast. What was this change like for you, and what was it about this process did you enjoy?
I love that when I first started working with our casting director, Sarah Finn, we talked about we wanted to cast quite similarly to I would for the other movies I've made, which is looking for someone. Yes, they're brilliant performers, but also there's a sense of who they are that's already the character we wrote or that we wish to bring into our characters.
So with the Eternals coming out next Friday in the UK, what do you think are the key elements that audiences will resonate with the most?
I think there's a little bit of something for everybody. I think you can have a good time. You can go on this epic adventure throughout time and space. You get to think who is your favorite characters, because there's many of them. They're very distinct from each other. And for the fans to explore the mythology of the Celestials and the origin of the MCU. And for some, you know, get to maybe talk about, whether to their friends or their kids, some of the existential questions that humanity has pondered since the dawn of time.
So just one last question. You are the first female director of color to win the Best Director Academy Award. How has your win, in your opinion, affected representation in the industry?
We'll find out, wouldn't we? I'm hopeful and positive. I'm hopeful, positive someday we won't even have to talk about this again.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Me too. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chloe Zhao, for your time. I can't believe it. We had an Oscar winner on the show. That was incredible. And thank you, Katie, for taking the time to talk to Chloe about The Eternals. Moving swiftly on to our next film. Now, I love this director. This is Celine Sciamma. She's a writer and director. She has been making feature films for the last 10 years or so, maybe a little bit longer. Her first film's called Water Lilies, which I adore, and I've been a fan ever since. You may have seen some of her work, Tomboy, Girlhood, most recently Portrait of a Lady on Fire. And she also wrote a really incredible stop-motion animated film called My Life as a Courgette. So, you know, she is, you know, 5 for 5, 6 for 6, however many films she's on now. I love everything I've seen, and I do recommend going into her back catalogue. But watching one of Celine's films at the cinema is always a treat, and you'll have the chance to do that on the 19th of November with her brand new film Petite Maman, which also has a petite runtime of just 72 minutes long. This film played at the London Film Festival, and we sent Katie and Kalichi along to watch it, and I can't wait to hear what they made of it.
Je sais pas, elle m'a pas encore invité.
Petite Maman, we both saw this at LFF. What did you think?
You know what? I think it might be one of my films of the year. If you are very familiar with Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which is obviously directed by Celine Sciamma.
And it came out at the beginning of the year, so it was actually one of the big films.
Yeah. And that was the first time I've actually seen a Celine Sciamma film. And I was just swept back by the emotion. So to come into LFF, it was anticipated because I was like, how do you follow up such an incredible film like that? One thing I would say, it's very short, and it's short and sweet. And I love that.
It's so sweet. You've got these two characters. You've got Nellie and Marion. Nellie is dealing with the death of her grandmother, and she meets Marion in the forest. And then these two young girls strike up this really cute but unpredictable relationship, friendship with each other. It's so, so sweet.
I don't want to give it much away, but there is like a hook to that. In some ways, it doesn't explain the convention, but at the same time, that is not the object of why you're going to watch this film. You're going to watch this film because of how great Josephine Sons and Gabrielle Sons, who ironically are actually sisters and twins in real life. It's how they connect and their personalities. And it's just, I know it seems a bit ironic because obviously, of course they are. Of course the relationship's natural because they're sisters. But how Sharma gets the performances on the screen is so, like, they're so adaptable. They just allow these characters to exist and be. And then you follow into that. I don't know if that's how you felt when you watched it.
Yeah, I was just blown away by the innocence of their performances because both of them are dealing with different things in their own way. But yet they're opening up their hearts and souls to someone completely unexpected. And it just has this deeper message of grief and closure in a way that is not very conventional. It's done with affection. It's done with sensitivity. You don't feel sullen by the end of it. You feel this really unexpected sense of joy and comfort, especially with like the autumnal imagery. It is just it's so pretty.
That's Sharma for you. And I gravitated to the concept. I mean, again, I don't want to spoil it, but it reminded me of my own relationship with my own family, and particularly with my relationship with my mum. And there's some certain lines and dialogues that literally made me cry during LFF. Like, people had to like pass me tissues, like, or give me a hug just to make me ease the kind of pain and joy, because it's more or less, how do you get over grief? How do you reconnect with the people who you love, and understanding that journey, where they've gone and where they've been. And that's the way, is a beautiful way.
In that sense, this film is perfect for the pandemic. You know, a lot of people want that kind of comfort, and I think this would be perfect viewing.
Well, it sounds like they enjoyed it as much as me, and I'm sure you will do too, listeners. So do keep an eye on showtimes at your local cinema for Petit Maman. Staying in the world cinema lane, we've also got a brand new film from Japan, from director and writer Ryusuke Hamaguchi. His new film is called Drive My Car, and this is really exciting because whilst Ryusuke has been making films for about the same amount of time as Celine Sciamma, actually, his films haven't had a UK distribution. They've been distributed in other countries in America and around the world, but I haven't had a UK distribution deal before. And I have been lucky enough to see some of his films when I visited a film festival or you know, been on holiday. And I really like his stuff. And I am so excited to actually be able to watch Drive My Car, his brand new film, in Picture House Cinemas. First time we're able to play one of his movies in the UK. So this film is remarkable. It is about twice as long as Petit Maman, but it flies by. I really, really adored this film. We were also lucky enough to record a special episode of this podcast with writer and director Ryusuke Hamaguchi. So do keep an eye on the pod feed later in the month for that. However, right now, I want to hear what Katie and Kalichi made of Drive My Car, so we'll pop into the fast lane and catch up with them.
Katie, we both watched Drive My Car, 3 hour car journey. I'm not gonna lie, I'm glad I watched the screener of this at home.
yeah, I was multitasking. I did it right. So it's the latest film by Ryusuke Hamaguchi. It won the best screenplay at Cannes. It's adapted by a story from a short story collection. So it's about a couple. Well, it's actually about a grieving widower whose name is Yusuke, who is struggling with the death of his wife. He takes upon himself to direct a new production of his play and starts to bond with his driver. And it just kind of allows him to not only find closure with what's happened and the life that he misses, but also the events that preceded her death. Yeah, it's 3 hours. It is a long time to be watching the movie, but, you know, a lot of people have watched longer.
Yeah, I feel like a trip from London to Manchester will be quicker. And you still have time left over to watch the film.
It'll be ironic to watch a film called Drive My Car on a Train.
But you know what? I don't want to hang up on the fact that it's 3 hours long, because it is actually a very good film.
It's well developed. It is a classic definition of a slow burner, because, you know, you've got around 45 minutes establishing Yusuke's relationship with his wife, Otto, before the credits even roll. And when the credits roll, it's like, okay, we're going to go right into that next step. What is he going to do? Without spoiling too much, a lot of things come to light, and then when he starts to take his plane to production, is Hamaguchi then uses the car almost as a tool in a way, because, you know, when I grew up, my mum drove me everywhere. She always uses conversations in the cars like, I can't escape. It's the same, essentially the same thing here.
You're essentially trapped in that car. And I think is that that's where the honesty of the film comes from. Like, it's like, I call it spilling the tea, but with patience and restraint. that's how I call it.
But it's not only you can't escape from it, but it's then, you know, you have Yusuke listening to his tapes of his wife, and she's reciting lines and he's reciting back. It's like conversations that they never had, and it's that almost a source of comfort. And then you have Misaki also resonating with her dictations as well. It also led to the confrontation between Yusuke and Koji, the young actor who stars in his play, who Yusuke has some underlying issues. And there's that smug look in the car. I'm not going to spoil too much, but it is it's an intense scene.
When I saw that scene, I just wanted to punch him. I mean, you hold some secrets there, and you're literally rubbing in this man's face. It was so bad. But what I really enjoyed about it was that the film almost felt like an anti-Hollywood type of film. Like it's rejecting so many tropes, and even that, I would say there is a bit of a restlessness, but at the same time, it's not giving you what you want. And I think that's the beauty of that film.
And if it does give you what you want, it's not doing it in that corny, cliche kind of way that we kind of expected. Like, for instance, I should really mention Yurin Park, who plays Yuna, who's a deaf actress, and her role is so small, but it's so, I thought it was quite pivotal, because she wasn't really known as an actress, but she was then encouraged to do so. There's no point in regretting something later on. You need to seize the day. You need to take hold of everything or anything you can get. And that was the kind of thing that is almost simmering in the background. Should Yusuke just continue to feel this way? Should Misaki, about her past? But I think with that, the character development and the dialogue between all the characters just makes this so watchable.
I mean, it lives up to the epitome of the whole world's a stage.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what it is. And it's riffing off that Uncle Vanya play. And it becomes that analogy about life and how we navigate through it, which is basically the premise of the plot. You're driving a car. Having those honest conversations.
And there we go. That was our fourth and final film that we will be covering on this edition of The Love of Cinema. Fantastic reviews there from Kalichi and Katie. But that's not all, folks. As is tradition, if you've been listening to The Love of Cinema before, before we wrap up with our guest critics each month, we like to ask them what they've recently watched at the cinema and what they're looking forward to in the coming months.
If someone's looking for a film to watch right now, what would you recommend?
I would recommend The French Dispatch, directed by Wes Anderson. Love that guy. His latest film revolves around three different vignettes that are featured in this New Yorker style journal. whose editor passed away. That's not a spoiler. It's in the first thing, the first scene.
Well, I was getting worried there for a sec.
You have this amazing cast. It's so beautifully shot, and you've got loads of different scenes and little touches of whimsy that just makes you fall in love with it. It has its own exhibition at 180 The Strand, so a lot of fans could go in and see it. It just makes you fall in love with French culture, French filmmaking.
You have to take Katie's advice as well, which I, when I saw it, is to sit centrally in the cinema, and therefore you get the full Wes Anderson effect.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If you love your symmetrical compositions and these flawless running tracking shots, then yeah, absolutely. Just try and sit as center as possible to get the full effect.
As a big, massive science fiction fan, people need to go and watch Dune. I remember I took my brother to watch Dune at a press screening a couple of weeks back, and the excitement he had. We both watched the David Lynch version, and we were like, this is good, but also very, very weird. And it's also very truncated. If you go and watch the, we watch this, and the scale, the visual scale, the emotional scale, Timothy Chalamet acting his socks off as the lead role, Hans Zimmer scoring the hell out of that that soundtrack, and my brother was literally telling me, "Kel, this is amazing. Like, I can't do it right now, but you know, but you have to visualize." My brother kind of like egging me next to my cinema seat, like, "Kel, this is amazing. This is amazing." It was like almost like watching Lord of the Rings, like that kind of feeling.
Not many people know this about me, but I do like musicals. So I am looking forward to Steven Spielberg's interpretation of West Side Story. I'm curious to see how he has modernized it with a really great cast and, you know, all the familiar songs and how they're going to be performed, how it's going to look. It's not something that you kind of relate to Spielberg musicals, so it'll be really great to see how he puts that on the big screen.
He's changed tacks. You know, he's done Lincoln, he's done Munich, they're quite hard-hitting type of films, and he's trying his hand at a musical. So is there fear with that? You think you might mess it up, or?
Maybe he's just like, is there a genre that I haven't mastered yet?
You know what? I like that answer.
What about you? What are you looking forward to?
So I watched King Richard at London Film Festival. I'm not ashamed to admit this. I saw this twice at London Film Festival because it is absolutely amazing. You have Will Smith in top form once again, and that's a great thing to say because of all the films that he's done previously, like Gemini Man, you know, After Earth, whatever, you know, whatever films that kind of like, oh man, when is he going to star in another good film again? This is it. And for me, he is a potential front runner for Oscars. For me, it's probably one of the best films of the year. I will not stop talking about this film because it's a film about Venus and Serena Williams. And the first thing most people would say is, but okay, it's a film about Venus and Serena Williams, tennis stars, the GOATs. Why are we doing a film from the father's perspective? And it's not necessarily just about them, and it's not just about Will Smith, who plays Richard Williams, who's their who plays the father. It's more about the family dynamic. And when you're looking at Black stories and looking at how you want to tell them differently, this is the film you want to go and watch. It's inspirational. It's moving. Go and see this film. It left the whole LFF crowd in rapturous applause. That is cinema.
You can find me at Katie Smith Wong, that's Katie with an IE, on Twitter. Also on Flickfeast, Film Stories, and Vodzilla.
And you can find me, Kelechi Ehenyolo, at K-E-Henyolo on Twitter. It's E-H-E-N-U-L-O. And if you love to follow my blog, it's Confessions from a Geek Mind, which is at Geek Mind UK across Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I also write for Film Stories, Film Hounds, Jump Cut, Online, and Set the Tape.
All right, what a fine selection of films. I am with both Katie and Kelechi. I cannot wait to watch West Side Story from director Steven Spielberg, and I'm hearing amazing things about King Richard, starring Will Smith, so I'll be there. That film actually opens in November. It opens also, I think, on the 19th. So on the 19th, you can watch King Richard, Drive My Car, and Petite Maman. That's a triple bill. Sounds incredible. Thank you so much for Katie and Kelechi to come on and be our critics this month. And a huge thank you for listening. Once again, please do subscribe to the podcast feed. And if you've enjoyed what we've done here, please leave a rating and a review on your podcast repository of choice. Apple Podcasts does this very well. It really helps other people find the show if they see it's got some nice recent reviews. Now, we couldn't make this show without the support of Stripped Media. A big thank you to Kobe Omanaka for overseeing everything, and to Maddie Searle, our brilliant editor. Thank you so much, Maddie, for pulling the show together. Katie and Kelechi mentioned their social channels and their and where they write just a moment ago, so do give them a follow and catch up on their work. And I've included in the show notes a link to their Twitter feeds where you can keep up to date with their latest there too. If you want to find out what's on at your local Picture House cinema, do check out picturehouses.com for all of the latest showtimes. If you have any questions, you can tweet us at picturehouses or email us at podcast@picturehouses.co.uk. I think that just about wraps us up for another month. I've been Sam Clements. Big thank you to Katie Smith Wong and Kelechi Ehenyolo. And we'll be back in December with all of the big films leading up to Christmas. Thank you very much.